I'm Adam. I'm a recovering addict.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, everybody. Well, here we are. I've done this before. I'm not particularly nervous, but I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. But, you know, what I have is a considerable experience at doing this kind of thing. And that's because of what happened to me. So what happened to me wasn't much different to what happened to you, but I'll tell you anyway. I had an odd childhood. What shall I tell you about it? I'll tell you that my parents weren't together. They weren't very good at being parents. They were busy with themselves, really. They were clear that they didn't like each other. And they spent some time telling me about that, which was unhelpful. A lot of stuff like that. You know, I was put in a children's home at one point because I was inconvenient. You know, I got loads of that stuff. And as a result, I never felt like I belonged. I still have problems with that. Outside. I got into trouble early on, you know. By the time I was a teenager, I was, you know, like a needle freak. So I'd shoot anything. And even I realized I was completely out of hand. I started doing acid when I was 16, 17, and I caught the kind of psychedelic dream thing because I was born in 1950. So that made me a 60s, you know, love child. You know, so I went to psychedelic things and got completely out of my head and got into heroin very, very quickly and used both drugs a lot together, which really kind of fucked me up, actually. I really didn't know whether I was coming or going, and I got in a terrible state, and I was shooting anything I could get my hands on, and it was causing trouble with my bloodstream, and loads of stuff was happening to me, and I was, like, by this time, 18... So, you know, actually, I feel like when I talk about my history, because I didn't come into recovery till I was 35, and when I talk about my history, I feel like there were key points in my using where I was looked after, where I was saved, in fact. And it's a slightly controversial thing to say, but this did really happen to me. You know, for some reason, I decided to stop shooting up. You know, I just thought, I've got to stop doing this, I'm going to die. And it wasn't like a reasoned debate with myself or anything. I just stopped doing it and drank heavily. I took loads of pills too. We had a pill called Mandrax, and I think they're Quaaludes in American. And, I did loads of this shit. It's dull. But, you know, what happened was I gained the ability to work. You know, I figured out how to, you know, lead a life, because in my late teens I wasn't having a life. I was fighting death. I was just, you know, pulling myself back from the brink all the time. It was a fucking nightmare. So I learned how to survive in this bizarre world I found myself in. Bear in mind, I didn't think that I had it in me to live an ordinary life, because I never had one. So I thought I was some kind of alien kid, you know, fucked up from my upbringing and the chemicals that I'd used together, because I used a lot of psychedelics. And, you know, it's like a kind of experimental drug program. And, you know, in my teens, there was a lot of us doing that, and it was crazy. But I kind of learned how to... I hooked up with this girl, and she... And then I managed to get hold of this flat, this apartment, which was lovely, and I wanted her out of it, so she got pregnant in order not to be thrown out. And we kind of made a little life together. Not that we were both, I don't want to say sex addicts, but we were heavily into sex with anybody we could get our hands on. So, you know, and as a consequence, it couldn't be called a proper relationship. We had this child, and, you know, so we had this... Life for a while, and I learned how to make a living. So I worked in a rock business, and I took a lot of cocaine, loads of booze, and quite a few pills and kept off everything else. And somewhere along the line, I'm not kidding, I snorted a line of smack in somebody's apartment and passed out and stopped breathing. And there was a nurse in the room who was also passed out. I've told the story before, sorry if it's boring. This nurse was also passed out, also on smack, and she came to and resuscitated me. And fell down again, like a kind of comedy show. I swear, two times I took smack in my 20s, and both times something like that happened, you know. And eventually, I toured a lot and had kind of semi-glamorous life for a while, working for bands in the States and all that, and it was great in some ways, and horrible in others, in that I constantly felt miserable and lonely when I wasn't running around, you know, doing gigs and stuff, supporting the act and, you know, rigging or whatever I was doing, taking drugs, women, the whole thing, the life. I got a job working for quite a well-known jazzer, and I worked with him for a year, and I was really fucking miserable, and I was 30 by this time, and I thought, actually, you know, this is great. I'm being paid well. I'm doing the thing I love. And actually, I'm really unhappy. I did have a child in London. So, you know, I kind of put it down to that. And I also thought that the music biz was my problem. And that actually, if I packed it up, I'd be fine. And I'd stop doing coke. And I'd look after my child. And it all be lovely. And that wasn't what happened at all. So, you know, I came home and started working in the West End. In musical theatre, and I got really, really fucked up then. I used to wake up on the pavements up the road, you know, outside some pub that had closed, you know. And the late night drinking places used to sling me out at 4 in the morning. It was grim. I felt like an alky because I was, you know. And I kept myself going with cocaine so I could drink more. You know, it was awful. And eventually, I kind of wound down. Eventually, I couldn't do any more. You know, I started not being able to take as much as I had. I couldn't drink as much, and I couldn't snort as much, and it got less and less and less. And it's called topping up, and eventually my system was loaded up. And I had a sensation of not being able to breathe. I thought, if this goes on, I'm just not going to be able to breathe. I'm just going to lose the ability to draw breath, and then I'll die. And that's what I thought. And I remember that, clear as daylight. A friend of mine got me in the program. She'd been in treatment. She'd been clean for a year. She didn't say anything about it. She just said, why don't we go out? And I thought, there's an invitation. You know, nobody's asked me to go out with them for about, you know, 3 years. You know, so I did. And of course, she talked me into going into a treatment center. And there was a porter cabin in the garden of this treatment centre, which had an NA meeting on a Sunday morning. And it changed my life. You know, 30 years ago, February, changed my life. And the reason that it changed my life was because when I walked in there, for the first time in my life, I didn't feel alone. And I have never felt alone since. That's the thing. So I spent 35 years of my first 35 years feeling like an alien kid, right? And I've spent the last 30 feeling like there's somewhere I belong here, you know. I did the treatment, you know, I manipulated the groups, I'm smart, I've got a smart mouth, you know, and I've read a bit, so I was able to talk my way through all that, you know. I thought, I'll be out of here, it'll be fine, I can go back to my life. The NA meeting, and I thought, but there's the NA meeting. So I'd go back to the NA meeting and I'd sit there and I'd just be there and listen to the people around me, and they were just like me. And it made me cry, you know. I felt vulnerable and kind of belonged. Like I belonged, and also I felt love, you know, and I hadn't done any of this stuff. I hadn't identified any of these feelings. I hadn't thought about being like that ever. You know, it's a very, very profound thing. Spiritual awakening is what we call it, and that's what happened to me, and that's what's happening to you. And it's as simple as that. Really, I could stop there, that'd be it. But actually, I've had a life, a second life, I call it. I had a first life, which was thanks to my parents. I've had a second life, thanks to NA, thanks to you lot. And I was able to, after a while, I was able to go back to work. The first thing that happened is I realised my daughter was by this time 13 and in trouble. She was doing speed and absconding from school, and she needed me, so I stepped up. So for the first year or so, I stayed clean for her. I didn't have to think about it. She was like a reason for living. I paid precious little attention to her first 13 years, so I felt I could do something about her, so I did. And, you know, she's a success story. She's 42, has two kids, and is happily married. Lives around the corner from me in Brighton. You know, but it was tough. You know, who was I? I'd never been a parent. I hadn't been properly parented. I didn't know what to do. So I just was there for her, and I went to loads of meetings, and I started doing the steps. And I talked a good step, you know what I mean? I talked my way into step three. Yeah, I'm doing well here, you know, I know all about this stuff, you know. And I talked and talked and talked, and it was all bollocks, actually, you know. But it was just me opening my mouth, which I had to do because I wanted to belong and I wanted to be sane. That was the thing. I wanted the noise in my head to stop. You know, it was aggravating the noise. But the thing that happened to me when I got clean was that I could sleep. And that was a first. You know, for as long as I could remember, I was either passed out or awake. I couldn't remember sleeping, you know. So that was great. It was the first indication that I could have a normal life, actually. You know, I didn't feel normal for a few years. Really. I got to understand the steps through step two. I realised that I felt better because I was going to meetings. You know, that I'd been allowed to get better. That something greater than me, some power greater than myself, was working on me so that I could be a better person, so that I could feel better, so that I could live clean. You know, so that I could live a day at a time. None of those things had ever been on offer. And I couldn't offer them to myself in my wildest dreams. So that's what it is the step two thing. Came to believe power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I had a bit of a problem there, you know, because I thought, restore sanity, never been sane. You know, it's a promise, that's what it is. It's a promise. It's a big one. The biggest. The program promises you, as it promised me, that you will recover if you come here a day at a time and open your heart and your mind. And that's what happens to us. It's a brilliant thing. Step three seemed easy after all that. Step two was hell, because it meant that I had to open my heart, that I had to open my mind to the idea that there was something greater than me, that had nothing to do with me. And in a way, the meetings were it. They were fine. You know, look, I read really well. You know, my mother was an intellectual. I'd read all this stuff, you know, Tibetan Book of the Dead, all this, you know, literature about what God is and what God isn't, you know. And I thought I knew the business. I was cynical. I thought I knew all about it, you know. And I couldn't use the word God for about 5 or 6 years because of the connotation. Because what does it mean? You know, I have a friend who's a Catholic. I'm not a Catholic. You know, I have another friend who's a Buddhist. I'm not a Buddhist. You know, God to me is the power greater than myself that brought me into NA and kept me here. You know, I had to do a step four. I waited 4 years. I couldn't wait any longer because 4 years, fourth step, you know what I mean? I couldn't, you know. How can you put it off any longer? So I did that. Nightmare. Anybody who says easy, it says it's easy is lying, hasn't done it properly. We lie really easily. It's, you know, piece of cake. I told people I'd done the step four. I lied. I hadn't done it. I just said it to get them off my back. Because I thought it was what they wanted to hear. And that's how I was. I told you what you wanted to hear because I thought it made me okay. And I did that into recovery. Step four changed me because I wrote it all down. And it wasn't as bad as I thought. And I thought I must have missed a bit. So I went back and did it loads more because I thought it's not. It was awful. This was really bad. I was really awful. But I hadn't murdered anybody. I hadn't really, you know, hurt anybody drastically. You know, nothing really, really awful had gone down. I'd just poisoned myself consistently for a long time. You know. And I wasn't brought up very well. So, you know, big fucking deal is what I thought reading my step five. I thought, fuck, all that stuff, all that grief for this. And my sponsor was great. He just said, okay, well, we've done that then. So what's next, Adam, he said. And actually, you know, what I think is that that's when the hard work starts, really. I think, you know, six and seven, I don't know, I'm still figuring them out, you know. You know, and I just think, listen, I think that if somebody says to you, look, you just write this and this and this, and then do this bit of work, and then come over here, and you've done step six, I don't really think that's where it's at, you know. I think once we get to step five, you know, we're talking about a guide to life, okay? So I have identified some of the stuff. In my step six, I identified some of the stuff that wasn't okay about me, that was in my way. But, you know, when my wife left me a couple of years ago, 2.5 years ago, you know, I found out a whole load more that was wrong with me. You know, 28 years later, I mean, well, not 28 years, but 20 years later, you know, it's an ongoing thing, this stuff. You can't exercise all your defects, so-called. In that step, the ask is that we look at it, that we understand what's wrong with us, we understand what we've brought with us. Look, you don't change personalities. We are who we are. I am the same man who was that fucked up acid boy. I'm the same person. It's just I'm different. I've grown, right? But I'm still the same person. We don't transplant a personality. It's a mistake to think that we can become somebody else. We can't. It's not who we are. If we could, then we'd be trolling around out there because we'd have the answer. I'm not an addict anymore. I can go and do what I like, have a drink, la 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 la. It's not like that for us. You know, it's a day at a time. You know, we can't use a day at a time. That's how it is. You know, I don't think it's so bad myself. You know, like I say, I'm on my second life, I'm having a good time. But, you know, those are the rules. And step six shows us what we've brought in. Because the thing is, this pink cloud stuff, when you come in, you think this is great, I've changed, I've stopped using, I'm a better person. You know, the first year or two or three or four, you think this is great, I'm completely different. You know, and then you have a relationship. Yeah, it's all very confusing. And there's loads of stuff that's always been there, and there it is still. You know, and I can't say, no, I'm not going to say I love you. No, I'm not saying that. I'm not doing that. Why should I do that for you when you haven't, you know, all that stuff? That's step six. There it is in you. You all know what I'm talking about. Step seven is give up. So, okay, I am who I am, but I want to be better. I can see it. I can see that I do that. I can see that I get angry with everybody most of the time. But I'm going to be better. I'm going to try and be better. You know, and I'm going to own up to it. Really important. Most of our defects remain that way because we don't fucking well talk about them. You know. So lots of us are getting lots better because we say, I'm so angry at the bus. Something. I'm going to kill my wife. No, you're not. But we have to say this stuff out loud. That's what it means, sharing. We have to say this stuff out loud. We have to say what's wrong with us, what's driving us mad. Because we are vulnerable, screwed up people trying to get better. That's why we're here. You know, that's the hard work after we put down the drugs and stay clean a day at a time. Is try and get better. Try and be a better person. And you know who you're doing it for? It's not for me. You're doing it for yourself. We do this for ourselves. We get better for ourselves. This becomes really obvious, if you're lucky, when you get to step 9. Step 8's a list. Easy to talk about. Easy to get a piece of paper. Easy to get a pen. Really hard to write a list of people you've got to apologise to. If you've got a stern sponsor, they'll start talking about banks and institutions. Actually, look, you know, different strokes for different folks, right? I just wrote about people. I wrote a list of people. And it's ongoing. My sponsor said, write your own name down. And I didn't, actually. He said, have you written it down? I said, yeah. He said, no, you haven't. And I said, well, I'm going to. You come back next week. So we had another, I came back next week. Have you written your name down? No. I don't see why. I don't see why I have to apologise to myself. I don't get that. He said, it's not apology. It's not, I'm sorry, Adam. That's not what it's about. It's about living the life. It's about making amends to yourself. This is about the promise, the second step promise. It's the same stuff. We are owed a life. If we do the right things, we can have a life. And if we do the right things, we can forgive ourselves sufficiently to have a proper life. Because the fact is, we all know that if we don't forgive ourselves, we carry this baggage. It's like a rucksack with a load of rocks in it on your back, which is our guilt and our pain at our past and our inability to let go of what we've done. We have to. The primary thing about that, the most important thing about unloading the rocks from the back of your soul is to forgive yourself. And it's hard. And it is enshrined in step 8 and 9. I'll tell you a bit about how I've forgiven myself, shall I? I forgave myself by having a boy. I married the woman who got me into treatment. Fortunately, not just as I got out of treatment, a few years later. And we had a child. She was my best friend, and I love her. And we had a boy. And that boy was our amend to ourselves, really. Because we brought him up properly. We loved him. We stayed together, despite our intense difficulties with each other. We stayed together and brought him up properly. And he's great. And I look at him and I think, great, actually. And I can forgive myself practically everything because of that boy. And because I paid attention to my daughter and I helped her when she needed me and I was there when she needed me and I helped my son, who is dyslexic and has, you know, he's what we might call over-emotional. It's a good job he's not listening because he's 23 and he wouldn't like me saying that. But, you know, he had trouble as a kid and I was there for him and I didn't judge him. And I didn't say you should play football when you didn't want to play football. And I didn't say you should anything, actually. I've never said to my children, you should be doing this. Apart from, you know, you shouldn't be running in front of the car. You know, protect them and love them. And that is my amend to myself. You know, and because it shows me, I'm a very suspicious person, right? So I need the proof. I want to see the proof The only reason I'm in recovery is because of step two, because I could see absolutely, incontrovertibly, that I was getting better. There was nothing that I could disprove about that. So when I see my son, I think, yeah, okay, you're a good person. I forgive you, you're a good person. Listen, I'm not perfect. I'm still plagued by stuff. I still get stuff. I still get memories from my past. 30 years later, I get memories from my past that I think, oh, fuck, why did I do that? But the incidence of them has diminished hugely. Step 10 seemed easy to me. I didn't want to do another step 4. I don't know about you, but I don't want to do another step 4. I'm not really interested. I'm not the kind of, I'll do the steps all over again kind of person. You know, I know I'll just do another one of them. I know people do. You know, they may feel they cheated the first one or something like that. And it's true that I wrote my step 4 when I was, what are we now, 39, and now I'm 64. So quite a lot's happened since then. But actually, I worked the 10th step because that's what it says. It says, you know, you've worked these 9 steps, now work the 10th. Take your inventory. And there's a load of ways I do that. I'm not a big writer because I'm dyslexic, so I tend to talk to myself a bit. In my head, not out loud like a loony. Has been known. But, you know, I think about my day. I think about what just happened. If I think something's not gone right, then I think about it. And I do. I have a difficult job. You know, I love it, but it's hard. So I have to think, I have to do a strategy thing. I have to think about the strategy of my work before I do it. And I have a lot of people who work for me from time to time, freelancers. And I have to think about what they're going to be doing and all this stuff. And if I fuck up, it's a fuck up. You know, and I make mistakes and the job, I see the job's going right. I think, oh, fuck that up. I'll change it. I'll speak to everybody and we'll do something different. And that's how I do my 10th step. It's the same stuff. I just think, you fucked that up, Adam. I just think, if I'm, you know, doing something, getting cross with somebody, getting impatient, not opening envelopes, it's a classic of mine, you know, not addressing stuff, I take my inventory, I think, why aren't you doing that then? What is it about this stuff? Why are you treating that person like that? You don't hate them. You're just picking on them. And there's the answer. The answer is, because you're in a mess, because you've done something, you know, because something's happening, maybe you don't feel okay, maybe something's wrong, maybe you've gone on the wrong side of the bed, who fucking knows? You know, go to a meeting, Adam. Go to a meeting. Read your fucking Just for Today. Do something for somebody else and stop dwelling in your mind. Because that's what it's about. When I came around, there was this pamphlet, I don't know whether we still have it, called The Triangle of Self-Obsession. I have never read a truer thing. I have to say, if you haven't read it, read it. It's you. I'm not kidding. You know, we think about ourselves all the time. It's unnatural. I think it is. I'm still doing it. You know, people, when I came to the 11th step, you know, I thought, okay, now I'm going to learn to meditate. This is it. After all these years, you know, and I was in meditation classes when I was on acid when I was 16, you know, so I knew all about it. But anyway, can you imagine? But, but, you know, I thought, okay, I'll give this a go. And what happened was there was a riot going on in my mind. You know, what peace? There wasn't any peace. Not for me. I was sit down, contemplate, meditate, noise. You did this, you idiot. You haven't got enough money. What? You know how it is. The noise in our head. So I did something else. I learned how to breathe, actually. Something weird happened to me. I gave up smoking. When I was, after a year, I came into recovery smoking 20 fags, and they told me not to stop it because, you know, it would be too much to give everything up at once. So by the time I was a year clean, I was smoking 66 cigarettes a day, which is how many you can smoke and stay up till 12:30 if you start early in the day. So, and another friend was doing exactly the same thing, so we stopped and we went cold turkey. And 3 years later, I got a terrible, terrible spasm in my back. And it was because I never breathed deeply, except when I smoked Marlboro. So it's the only time I breathed into the base of my, you know, whatever it's called, in my diaphragmatic ligaments or whatever they're called, you know, it got exercise. So they didn't get any exercise, so I turned into kind of Quasimodo. So I had to learn how to breathe. And it's the only reason I did it, was because I was, you know, bent over backwards. So I learned how to breathe. So when it came to the 11th step, I thought, breathe. I know how to do that. And I would just take oxygen in, and I would think about nothing except the meeting. I would think about my meeting I go to on a Tuesday night. And I would think about, there's a guy in the meeting, you've heard him, I'm sure, and he I know him quite well, and he goes on silent retreat for 7 days, which I think is fascinating, but I could no more do that than fly to the fucking moon. He does it. So when I can't let go to practice my 11th step, I think about him on his silent retreat. And I know the house that he goes to, because I've driven past it a few times in Devon. And I can see it. And I'm released. For a while. For 5, 10 minutes, whatever I need. You know, I'm at peace. And that's the trick. Step 11 is not a prescription. It's not... These steps aren't what you think they are some of the time. You know, if you think this, oh, I've got to find this right way of doing this, otherwise it's not... It's not like that. They're a guide for living, and we're all different. They work because they work on all of us. We're not a cult. We don't have to change our personality and squeeze ourselves, you know, into a certain type of rigid behaviour, and then we can do the steps okay. It's not like that. They're a guide for our life. They're a guide for your life. Stay clean, you can do all this. This is what you do next. Read this step. Work out how to be in it. Work out how to live by the spiritual property of the step. That's what I think. And, you know, it served me well. That's my opinion only, though. I've had a good time with Step 11, actually, these last few years, you know, and it was a tremendous help when my wife left me. She left me for a variety of reasons. One of them was that I'm not really a very good person to live with. So, you know, that was a good reason to leave me. I'm not extraordinarily honest to people who are very close to me. I have a tendency to put up barriers. Now, I have intimacy issues and abandonment issues. So, you know, that makes me awkward to live with. The shock of her leaving me, because I thought, okay, she's leaving, that's fine, you know, I'm difficult to live with, so she, God knows, you know, what I put up with. And, you know, so she left, and I was bereft. I was back in the children's home when I was 2, literally thrust back in there. My world turned inside out because I had no way of dealing with it. You know, it was like, it was a kind of horrible emotional breakdown is what happened to me. And I thought, you know, the thing about this is that I can complain about this or grow through it. Because I'd been in Step 11 for a while, thinking about it and inhabiting it and, you know, doing my Step 10, I just thought, I can do this. I can just be this person. I can be in this grief. I can see what it's like. Because the thing is, you know, what I realized was it wasn't going to kill me. Because, you know, I know what can kill me. You know, I remember the day I thought I wasn't going to be able to breathe. You know, and it was real, it was true. I was losing the ability to breathe. Actually, a bit of grief isn't going to kill me. You know, it's just going to be painful. And I thought, I wonder what this is like. What I always do is find something else to deal just do this over here. We won't actually look, you know. I realised that I always escape this stuff. In that month, when it happened to me, I realised that I always escape this stuff. I always slip sideways. I always try to avoid. And, thanks. And I didn't. I stayed in it. I thought, I wonder what's on the other side of this. I wonder what happens. Because I have nothing to lose. My boy's grown up-ish. You know, my grandchildren have got their parents. You know, how bad can it get? It's not cancer. You know, it's just grief. She just left you. And it got better. What do you know? And the thing about that is that I accepted it completely and I am now a better person. You know, I am freer. That's why I say I'm a better person. You know, I don't give more to charity. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that I am freer as a human being. You know, I can live a freer life. For two reasons. One of them is that I allowed myself to be. And the other reason is that I have the 12 steps of recovery. And the other thing I did, three things. The other thing I did was go to loads more meetings. Because that's what I needed to do. You know. And I feel saved, if you like. I feel like, you know, I've been given everything I could possibly want. Yeah, my wife left me. Yes, unpleasant things have happened. You know, but it's not a bowl of cherries. Why not? We're not saying to a newcomer, if there are any newcomers here, we're not saying, this is going to be fantastic. Everything's fabulous. You're going to make money. You're going to be a better person. Everybody's going to love you. That's not what happens. What we're saying is, here is your second life. Welcome to your second life. Stay clean a day at a time and life will happen to you. And you'll have a better time than you would if you were using. You'll have a life. The 12th step is what I'm doing here. And I practice it a lot. I have sponsees. I believe in it. And we only keep what we have by giving it away. You know. It's a fact. It's not words. They're facts. You know, we're all here. When we came around, you know, and Robert, Penelope, when we came around, how many of us were there? I don't know, 20, 30? And look at it now, just in England. Thousands of us, you know. And that's the 12th step. That's what it does. We give it away. You know, unequivocally, without any strings, you know, have this, have it on me. I've told you the truth. It got better for me, and it's still getting better. You know, I had a crisis at 28 years clean with, you know, at the age of 62. And I am recovering from that. I'm a better person, and I'm still growing, and I'll go on growing because I have these steps and I have you. Okay, thanks.